Mac brownie, that's like the new Little Debbie cake.
Yeah, well, hey, look, don't knock Little Debbie. Those things are delicious.
They are.
Nick Saban has something right there. Like Nick, the Little Debbie is delicious.
Don't let Nick Saban ruin them for you.
Exactly. He's not going to take Little Debbies from me. Fuck that guy.
Although the peanut butter bars are better than the oatmeal cream pies, by like
a nutty bars are like the greatest thing ever invented.
That's what I grew up on.
I mean, I'm a Marylander, so I have to have my love for tasty cakes. But even I will recognize the greatness of the nutty bar.
Right.
Well, you're gonna argue for Utz potato chips over Zapps.
I will throw down for Utz potato chips. I was nice about tasty cakes. I was like, hey, I'll concede on tasty cakes. That's a I grew up with thing. But Utz, no, fuck all you. Utz are delicious, and it's because the secret of the great potato chip is saturated fats.
That's probably true.
Yeah, don't let anyone tell you differently. Those things are like 90% fat. Oh, they're delicious. All right, let's see. Are we recording yet? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Here, let me go over the cam thing because...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
All right, yeah, before you go into the cam thing, we will actually do an introduction for once. I know we like to start these things in the middle of the conversation, but let's at least set up that this is the Sneaky Good Podcast.
Yeah.
National Signing Day edition. Talk about it. Yeah, this is one of your hosts, Poser. And with my co-host, Dan Davis, also known as Paul Crew. You can say hi now. That's your cue.
Oh, hi. I thought you were going to introduce Billy.
Well, then we were going to get to our guest, but you're supposed to say something right there. See, we are still ironing out the kinks, as you can tell, with our guest and fellow ATVS blogger, Billy Gamilla.
Hey, guys. I was trying to say, let's go over it before we get into it.
Nah. We like to fly on these things with like totally on fire, like we're going to crash at any point. Once again, this is like the Auburn defensive podcast. We can go down at any second.
We
are waiting to get trucked by Leonard Fournette at any moment. So yeah, let's start with the most important news of the day: the fact that the LSU basketball team bounced back from a disappointing loss against Oklahoma. No, just kidding.
I was like, oh, Jesus, this is not what we talked about.
We're going to go straight to sign day, but yeah, let's talk about the Cam. If you have news about Cam, let's start with the Cam Cameron news. So if Billy has some inside info, let's just go straight to
it. Honestly, the inside info is that no one knows what's going to happen right now. For anyone who wasn't in Baton Rouge that's listening to this, Charles Vandegrift kind of casually threw in that he heard there were rumors that Cam Cameron would be leaving after signing day and that he'd heard them too. He didn't say, to be fair, he did not say Cam Cameron is leaving. He never said that. He just kind of acknowledged that that the rumors existed and that he had heard them as well. Which, you know, it doesn't surprise me. I knew there was going to be something funny. And not just with LSU, but just the way that the Super Bowl is timed, with it being after National Signing Day, any college coaches who are kind of looking to jump to the NFL, there's still teams that aren't going to have their staffs filled out because of the way the Super Bowl fell. And there's, you know, some if you wanted to hire a coach off one of the Super Bowl teams, you can't even talk to him yet. So I had a feeling if something was going to happen, it wouldn't happen until after Signing Day, and that the timing kind of fell that way.
Well, this is Dan's big theory. He had the theory about a month ago that Cam Cameron was just going to hang on until signing day.
No sources on that. That was just my bullshit, I made this up thing.
Well, of course. We're faking this.
And there's no given. From what I understand, it basically comes down to he's looked around because they've talked about a contract extension for him, but he doesn't have it yet, so he's just covering his bases. Just in case, which, you know, from a professional standpoint, that's a smart thing for the guy to do.
Yeah.
He's got a real good relationship with Hugh Jackson, who just took the job with the Browns, which, I mean, my God, whatever you think of Cam, don't wish Cleveland on him. I mean, come on.
Cleveland can be nice this time of year.
I know Les wants to keep him, so from what I understand, Les was kind of taken aback by the whole thing. It was kind of like, wait, what? So you know, we'll see what happens.
Cam had some pretty fiery denials, which was very unlike Cam. Yeah, he's not that fiery of a guy. He's, you know, very straight-laced, you know, I eat a bowl of Total every morning to get all my vitamins and minerals kind of guy. And
he did leave that slight opening for what kind of, you know, talking about what would I do if I left today? And it was like, well,
yeah, he
might not be leaving today.
Yeah, I noticed that he did say today, but he came out firing. That was very un-Cam-like. He seemed genuinely upset that this had leaked, particularly on signing day. So I think you're right. He's looking because he doesn't have a contract. So, of course, he's looking. Until he gets under contract, he's a free agent. And it would be silly to think he's not looking. But on the flip side, he hasn't taken another job yet. Hanegraaff's been in this business long enough. He knew what that tweet, how that would be interpreted.
Yeah. And, you know, ultimately, it's one of those things where kind of, from a continuity standpoint, I don't know that, you know, a month ago, I think a lot of us would have answered differently about this. But at this point, it's kind of like, well, do really want him to leave and kind of start from scratch with this team? I don't know, you know, so we will see what plays out. It's LSU and things can be completely different next week.
Tomorrow even could be different.
Yep.
So you're trying to derail the Tedford. What's the hashtag you're trying to get going?
Tigers for Tedford.
Tigers for Tedford. That is it.
If Cameron goes down, and I don't want to start this until Cam Cameron is out, but once, and I would say if, but if Cam Cameron takes another job, as soon as he's out the door, Tigers for Tedford. I want the CFL experience. I want the Jeff Tedford experience.
He does check like all the boxes, assuming he's healthy. I mean,
assuming he doesn't want to be a head coach. He wants to come back and be a college coordinator.
Yes.
I think that would be the big question. The guy I would, from an interest standpoint, I would at least kick the tires on him because of the way things kind of have his career's kind of gone at this point is Todd Monken. You know, he's head coach at Southern Miss, done a great job of, you know, kind of starting from, you know, a dumpster fire and getting them to their conference championship game and then out of nowhere has a fallen out with their administration and takes a job in the NFL, an assistant job in the NFL. So maybe you can get him back. I don't know. Maybe he'd rather come – he knows his path to being a head coach in college and he'd rather come, you know,
or maybe here. Scratching that NFL itch. Once a guy goes to the NFL early in his career – and Monken, I don't want to say his early in his career, but he's kind of at the stage where it's – he's either going down that NFL path or the college path. Yeah. Once you get to the NFL, guys tend not to look back at college. They tend to try and stay in the NFL.
He left LSU and he went to the NFL, but as a position coach. And then
he came back for a head coaching job. So the question is whether he would drop back for a coordinator position. I don't know. Yeah, he's an interesting name. Other than that,
I don't want to get in the names because honestly, I'm not sure. And one, you know. To play the sources card, the one source that I would trust, who I texted something, all he would tell me is, it's complicated, over and over again,
and
so I don't know if he's staying, that we'll see. It's probably more interested at the running backs coach position.
And Cam's been kind of a mixed bag. He's had a good year. He's had a bad year. I think last year was decent. Yeah. We've kind of beaten this horse to death, but. You could see the progress, so I'm not too upset with him. If he comes back, I don't think it's a disaster, but on the same side, if he leaves, it's not like I'm going to be, you know, gnashing my breast. And
you guys feel about him kind of the way I felt about
him. Oh, God. So whatever happens. And look, at this point, I think Les deserves to make the call. It's
of course.
Yeah. Once again, as we've discussed before, it's like Les is one. Like this is his team. It's going to be made in his image. And if he wants to keep Cam, we should keep Cam, at least for a season. So now that we've talked about things that we know nothing about a coaching change that may or may not ever happen, let's get into what actually did happen. LSU signing day, and this is Dan's big day. This is what your fourth radio/ podcast of the day.
Hell yeah, going strong. I was up at 5:30 this morning, so We're ready to go.
So what is your first impression of the class?
You know, I mean, I wrote about this in the recap for the site. I could get why you would be frustrated with this morning, but it really subsided. The day ended with getting Christian Fulton. We're probably going to get Martin. I don't know how to say his first name. I don't know if it's Sky or Sci. S-C-I?
Sci. It's Sci, yeah.
It is Sci. Thank you.
Yeah.
So we'll probably get him. That's a good close. I think a lot – so a ton was – okay, so it started with the whole Mullen thing, and it was like, oh, man, this is such a bummer. And it's like, really? I mean, a kid from Florida – I know people wouldn't have been bummed if it was framed more like, we're kind of in for this kid, but we may not get him. Like, I think people would have just gotten over it and be like, ah, you know, kid from Florida, stay on the East Coast, no big deal. But because, yeah. And I contributed to this because I wrote about it too, because all the info was like, oh, he's probably going to LSU. That's what everyone says. Everyone's picking him to LSU. Everyone thinks he's going to LSU. When he didn't pick LSU, everyone was like, oh, man, we missed on this guy. And it's like, first of all, we have a loaded DB class already, not to mention a loaded DB depth chart. So I'm not saying Mullen's not going to be a great player, because he probably is, but he's not really a loss. Like,
yeah, you look at how – if you look at how deep our actual depth chart is before adding anyone, what is it? Ed Paris was one of the top recruits in the country.
Top 50 player.
And I think he's third on the depth chart right now. And that's amazing how deep the depth is.
He's not because like, we're worried that he's just going to leave after 2 years because he's not playing.
Because he's just frustrated, yeah.
I mean, yeah, what an amazingly deep secondary we have right now. So, yeah, it wasn't a big loss. I think what made the Mullen thing hurt was not so much that he left. It was the 1-2 punch because they happened right at one after the other. It was Mullen, then Fowler. And also for a lot of people, like, I'd gotten to the office. I hadn't checked on any sites yet. I was doing a little bit of work, got some coffee, sit down at my desk, look up, Mullen's gone, Fowler's gone. For me, it happened bam, bam at the same exact time. And that was a, I don't want to say a devastating way to start my day, but it didn't put me in the best of moods.
No. And also, the moment Mullen picked Clemson, or we kind of knew smart money was on Clemson, it was like, well, number one class is gone because LSU basically needed to get everybody left on the board and to have Alabama miss a couple guys. And that's not even just talk about like how Florida State had a great finish today, but it just, I think that played into the factor too, that people were like, ah, shit, kind of thing, you know? And whether or not it's the number one class, quote unquote, whether that matters is totally debatable. But, you know, the day started off a little rough with that. Fowler was a lot more devastating. We needed a linebacker. That's a pretty big loss. What do you guys think about – do you feel this is a failure? I mean, we lost our defensive coordinator. I think he had a good part in Fowler. I mean, there was no real ostensible backup plan for him, right? Like, there was no one great in state anyways to replace him. So it's not like, oh, there's some, you know, four-star kid from, you know, I don't know, West Monroe or something that we're just like, nah, we'll slow play you.
Well, I think what we come down to now is that it looks like White will change positions, or at least we really want him to. It's still going to be his call, and that. And also, who was it that signed yesterday as a preferred walk-on? While it wasn't a big-time recruit, it was still a fairly
big kid from West Monroe. Leighton Garrett, I think, was his name.
Yep, that's him.
And so, at the end of the day, he'll probably get a scholarship right off the bat because we have the space and we can get into the reasons why. And so that gets you three linebackers in the class. So it's not a total disaster, but yeah.
I've seen someone count Andre Anthony as a linebacker too instead of a defensive end. So
yeah, and he fits there. And then there's not – I mean, Devin White too, which
– yeah.
I mean, I'm all but to the point of just calling him a linebacker because it just makes so much more sense for him to be a linebacker, but –
I think he'll get the practice. They'll let him take some running back reps. He can see exactly how good they are and then show him the linebackers.
He'll play special teams a lot, probably make a lot of tackles on special teams or have a chance to do anyway.
And look, he's going to want to play, and linebacker is the easiest way to do it. And also, if you look at it, Arden Key, if we're playing a 3-4, he's a linebacker in a 3-4.
Mm-hmm.
Gordon. Linebacker depth changes radically in a 3-4 from a 4-3. So I'm not – too worried about that. But yeah, the Fowler one, that's still trying to whistle past the graveyard. Fowler was a big loss. We don't know when you're buying, when you sign a kid, you're buying a stock future in them. And a 5-star is more likely to pan out than a 4-star, and a 4-star is more likely to pan out than a 3-star. But Fowler was not only a highly touted recruit, but he was highly touted at a position of need. So he was incredibly important to this class because linebacker is, outside of quarterback, probably the biggest question mark on the roster. So for him to leave us on signing day, there's no way around it. That hurts.
Yeah, it hurts.
And particularly when he was considered a commitment beforehand. It wasn't like he sat down with the hat to the table and, oh, I hope we get him. We were coming in from the angle of, oh, this is ours, and now we lost him. And I know a verbal commitment is only worth the paper that it's printed on, but it hurts more to lose a commitment than it does, particularly on signing day, than it does to lose basically a jump ball or a guy. Mullen was a guy that we thought we were going to get, and we were the leader, but he wasn't a commitment. That doesn't hurt that much.
Yeah.
Fowler was a commitment, and at a position we really wanted that. He was a linchpin to this class. So that's kind of what started the negative feelings of the morning.
Yeah, and it's an actual loss. I mean, of all the other commitments, did we lose any others?
No.
That we really wanted. I mean, not even today. Like just in the class, we just didn't have a lot of decommits.
Yeah, I mean, we had that Clifford Chapman, but we let him go.
We lost Frakes a while ago. That hurt.
Frakes is the other big one.
And Frakes, but Fowler, you know, he was committed for so long, and then, you know, you heard the talk about, oh, well, the family wants him close to home. And you knew it was going to be tough just because he was from basically the suburb of Austin. And then, you know, the visit goes well, family gives its blessing, and then just kind of that last week, and it's, you know, now the reality's setting in, and mama doesn't want her baby boy leaving. And,
yeah, it's hard to cross your mother, particularly at that age.
And we've taken advantage of that, you know, so many times with Louisiana kids. And we've, you know, we had mom, and so we had the kid.
We do that this year. We kept 9 of the top 10 Louisiana prospects. We do that by getting their family on board and their community and putting the pressure on from, hey, you want to stay and you're part of Louisiana. So, yeah, we totally play that card. So it sucks to be on the other end of it, but at the same time, it's perfectly valid choice. I don't want this to come off as he's a bad kid and how dare he.
No, if anything,
and honestly, I'm kind of proud of LSU fans, or at least the ones I follow. There's been very little, well, Fowler's the worst person in the world kind of stuff. I hadn't seen a whole lot of bashing Fowler. I think on the site there's one or two comments of a commitment doesn't mean anything. But honestly, I think most people kind of accepted this one. There wasn't a whole lot of bad blood either way how this one went down. It was a recruiting war, and you win some and you lose some. And we really wanted to win this one, but we didn't. But there was so much other good news that it feels silly that we're starting with the negative, because that's how the day started. And we will pick up past that point. But that's how it felt at 10 in the morning. And also you had the problem is you had that long layover, because the next announcement wasn't until about noon. So you had 2 hours to stew.
Yeah. But, I mean, during that time, all the other letters were coming in, that's the part that gets lost, right? So, like, I mean, we were talking about that earlier, like, I think before we started recording, but Texas under Mack Brown has the very vintage, like, he locks up all of his guys during junior day. So when National Sign Day comes, there's no mystery. There's no recruiting battles. They've got their 25 and all the letters are in and that's it. It's, you know.
It's kind of anticlimactic. So
yeah.
If you don't have a good signing day, it feels bad, even though you have a really good class.
Right. So, like, even like a guy like Rashard Lawrence, I mean, he committed, what, like a week ago? Like, if he was picking today, I feel like people would be even more amped up. It's like, he did pick today. Like, he legitimately signed today. Like, he's now ours. There's no other.
It's also, I think, a testament to the attention span in the internet age. It's like, oh, yes, the 5-star defensive tackle. Oh, which, first off, a 5-star defensive tackle is worth a whole lot more than a 4-star linebacker, no matter how bad you need linebackers, you know. But it's just like, oh, yeah, but he was already committed, so what's the big deal? Like, well, he's really good.
Yeah, I think what it was is you had to wait a long time for another. It's just that LSU wasn't in for a whole lot of players today. Yeah. And part of that was because everybody was in the barn. Yeah. The recruiting staff did a really good job. This is where we turn it into the good news. The recruiting staff did a great job. They had this class locked down pretty much a week before signing day. And the only question was whether the class would rank number one, number three, or number five.
Yeah.
And that's a great position to be in. Really, we were playing defense on the last day of signing day instead of trying to catch up. So if you're a Texas fan today, you're really excited because you came out of nowhere. I think they were ranked like 41st two nights ago.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And now they're banging on the top 10. So if you're Texas fans that I work with, just give it high fives in the office. This is the best thing ever. And so they're, you know, they got their chest out and they beat LSU in two straight recruiting battles. So I had to hear about that today. But the other day, we had a better class. So, yeah, you can have that. The question is what do you value more, the fun of signing day? And there is value to that, or having a better class. And that's where we get into the most important thing about this class. This is an amazing class.
Yeah,
I mean, just deep and
top
balanced.
I mean, they check every box. We ended up, 19 of the ESPN top 300? I know ESPN is not the most reliable, but that just gives us a benchmark. 19 of the ESPN top 300. You had 9 of the top 10 in-state prospects, which I think is the biggest thing. We loaded up 4 offensive linemen, 2 tackles, and 2 guards, which desperately needed to replenish the offensive line. We got the quarterback that we needed. As much as we're complaining about linebackers, we still signed 2 linebackers, and we have a preferred walk-on. So we'll have 3 linebackers in this class when all set up.
Guys that can move around too. I mean,
and Les is not kidding. This is the best secondary class, and maybe the best wide receiver class in the country.
Yeah, Les even said best secondary class maybe ever in all of college football, which is huge praise. But then you start looking at the guys, and you're like, hey, it's not really stretching reality here. I mean,
yeah. The only thing, if you look at the one guy we didn't get in that top 10 is Carter, who wanted to come to LSU, and we kind of pushed him away. And that's one of those things which made sense when we thought Mullen was coming. And now I have this terrible feeling it's going to burn us over the next 3 or 4 years that he's always going to play his best game against us.
Oh, naturally.
Because, I mean, that guy's got to have some hatred in his heart right now. and good, you know. That's one of those good on him, because it's going to be up to him when LSU plays Alabama to show us that we made a mistake.
Right.
Yeah, I think, Billy, you're saying deep. And one thing is, for me, this is just how I feel. Like, I'm obviously a recruiting addict, but in most of the classes in the Miles era, it's always been, like, really good. And then there's, like, one, maybe two guys where you're like, like, who's why? Kind of, you know? And I feel like I look at this class and I could make a case for every single player in this class about why they should be there and why it's a good take. Like, there's not one player that I'm like, I don't really know. I mean, I guess, like, there's no player I'm going to have to, like, hedge on and be like, I guess they like him because he could maybe be this. You know, it's get your lowest ranked guy besides the kickers, Ja'Cory Savage, who is, like, this ridiculously athletic, lanky offensive lineman. Like, yeah. Those kind of guys can fill out and become superstars. So,
yeah. I mean,
what are we complaining about, you know?
Yeah, if you look at, like, I'm looking at it right now, you have the, according to 247 Sports, our 5 lowest rated guys. You have Lloyd Cushenberry was the offensive guard. Guards are always rated lower than tackles. So,
and he would be the lowest guy.
And we need bodies. So then you have,
and he's still at SEC offers. It wasn't like
he's like not a nobody.
And Connor Culp, you need kickers, and kickers are always low rated because they're kickers. You just went through Ja'Cory Savage. Then one up is Lindsey Scott, and we talked about him for about 30 minutes last week. You know how I feel about Lindsey Scott. That's the quarterback that we needed.
Yeah.
And then the next one is Caleb Roddy, the defensive end. And then after that, everyone else is a 4-star.
Yeah. And everyone is really high on Caleb Roddy. So.
Yeah, that's a monster. That's just a monster list. Even Caleb Roddy, he's ranked 23rd in the state, 19th nationally at his position. It's not like he's some chump.
And he's 17. He just turned 17.
He just turned 17. Like a lot of people are saying, like, that could be the kid who redshirts and, like, you don't really kind of hear anything about him. for a year or two, and then like his sophomore year, it's like, oh no, he's one of our starting defensive tackles, and he's a 300-pound monster now.
Yeah, I think Dan's really hitting on that. This is a really deep class. Every person I listed, that was everyone in the class who was not a 4-star or a 5-star.
Yeah,
that's amazing. We only talked about – only mentioned 5 names. Everyone
what jumps out to me is it's a really nice mix of the instant impact guys and guys who could maybe redshirt, maybe not, you know, guys who are kind of your futures stock guys. You know, your Caleb Roddy's, your Andre Anthony's, your Willie Allen's, guys who, you know what, we don't need them right away, but they're going to be – but they could be really, really good in a couple of years.
Which feeds into the next question. Who contributes right away? Who's going to contribute to next year's LSU team? So not the best guys in the class, because when we're talking a whole career, I'm talking next year only. Who are you looking to contribute?
Well, first, I'll let Dan go first.
Okay, yeah. First, let's just say that one nice thing about returning so many damn people from our team is that these guys don't have to come in and be like the starter. Like even last year, Arden Key, I love Arden Key. We talked about this before. And I hyped him up on the site and everything. And I'm glad he played, and he should have played. But he had to play.
He had to.
And it was like, we're not in that position this year at almost every spot on the field, except for linebacker, which leads me into my point, which is Michael Divinity has like a 100% chance of playing, barring that he just like falls off a truck and breaks his leg or something. I don't see any way he doesn't play on like the other shows I've said today. I almost expect him to start versus Wisconsin. Like, I just don't see a very big chance that he's not a key contributor this year.
I mean, the most of these guys are obvious. You know, Christian Fulton's going to get on the field. You know, yeah. Rashard Lawrence is going to get into the defensive tackle rotation. Sabian Smith. You know, Eric Monroe, I feel like, kind of got lost in the discussion, despite being, you know, the number 3 safety in the country.
Yeah,
and the thing that I always loved that you heard about him from a lot of the Paysite guys that go to the camps and all that is that he had kind of what Tyrann Mathieu had in terms of when he was there. He's like, give me every 5-star receiver here. I want to cover them 1-on-1. And, you know, he's breaking out of the line and like trying to skip people's turns so he can get extra reps. Derek Panamsky on the radio told a story about him. Like during his break, going and working with the 8th graders because he just wanted to keep working. And it's like, that's the kind of guy who gets on the field, and that's the kind of guy who pushes for number 18 in a couple of years.
Yeah. That's the kind of guy that makes every single person on the team better because they're like, holy shit, I got to get my shit in order.
And also, there's an opening at safety. That's one of the places there's playing time. And Rowe is a guy I was going to bring up. I also think one of the wide receivers is going to contribute right away. Yeah. And just because I love that article so much, Drake Davis has jumped to the top of my I love you board.
I think everybody feels that way. That article got so much play.
He gained a lot of popularity today. Like I get, because I put a poll at the end of my recap piece, and I think he's first or second right now in terms of who's your favorite signee. And if that article never runs, I guarantee he gets like 3 votes.
I think am I the only one who has still voted for Ed Alexander?
No, there's a ton
of him or Rashard Lawrence. I stand by my Rashard Lawrence is the platonic ideal of an LSU defensive tackle. But
I agree with that. I'm just saying that Ed Alexander's nickname is the Rougerou. And perfect. If you are the Cajun werewolf, you have to come to LSU.
Oh, yeah. So, and he may be the nose tackle in the 3-4 in a couple of years,
so
depending on what defense does.
He is the blue dog. It has now happened. From here on out, every reference to Ed Alexander will reference either the Rougerou or Blue Dogs.
You are the only vote.
Yes, say.
I voted for Lloyd Cushenberry to be funny, and someone else apparently thought the same thing.
Yes. I'm not saying Alexander's going to be the best, but
read a site.
I go for nicknames. He comes pre-made with a nickname, so I'm totally a sucker for that. So once we say who's going to contribute right away, 3 years from now, because that's 10 to when we look back on a class, who are we talking about 3 years from now?
Well, Lindsey Scott almost definitely. Yeah. I mean, just because by then he'll be competing for a starting job. Circling back to Drake Davis, you know, he has got so much potential. Like he's that Odell Beckham kind of level of athlete where everything is easy for him, so it makes it look like he's not working hard. And sometimes that was also true. Like, I mean, he played for all these different high schools. He bounced around. He also, even before the article, I'd seen interviews with him. He's obviously, like, he really strikes me as that gifted kid who everything is kind of easy for. He's smart. He knows he's good at sports. You know, he quit football for a year just because he was like, oh, I'm going to go try soccer, and ended up being awesome at soccer. And it's like, he's that kid who just, can somebody get in his head and make him realize I can be amazing if I just work at it, you know, because that was one thing I've talked to a lot of people that say, like, Odell would not have been Odell if he didn't have Jarvis, you know, calling him at 1 o'clock in the morning, be like, I can't sleep, let's go catch balls.
I think that's, you know?
Yeah, I like that.
So, you know, does Drake Davis have that guy who, you know, is going to drive him? Is like, well, I got to work as hard as that guy's working,
and that's,
you know, to be that good.
And that's where you look at the fact that they've brought, already have Sullivan and Anderson already on campus. They're already early enrollees.
Yeah.
So you're hopefully, and also, like, what can make this class truly spectacular? Because I know some people are talking greatest LSU class ever. But let's compare it to the 2014 class, Leonard Fournette's class. What makes that class so great is that they've kind of come out of there on a mission right away. I think the top three guys in that class of Jamal Adams, Malachi Dupree, and Leonard Fournette stepped on the campus and right away wanted to be great and wanted to be remembered for all time.
Yep.
They have carried themselves from day one that this is their mission to win a national championship. And they haven't gotten there yet, but they have played almost with a singular focus on winning and being legendary. And that, I think, is what is the great separator. Is, do you think the 2016 class, and this is completely, you haven't even seen these guys play really, is, do you think they're going to come in with that same attitude as that 2014 class that took over the team right away? They became leaders as freshmen.
Pretty much.
That's
the question.
I think that class too is overflowing in young classes today. Like, Brandon Harris was at Lindsey Scott's signing when he signed his papers today, and that's a really cool gesture by Harris. But then, you know, I think it was Chandler Rome's piece, or somebody was talking about. Yeah, it was a really good piece. Good job, Chandler. But just that they have a friendship, they have a relationship, and that he looks kind of up to Brandon as a big brother. And then I think someone brought it up in Miles Presser, and he was like, yeah, like, there's a lot of guys like that. Like, I know Leonard is reaching out to a lot of the recruits. So part of that greatness, like, we want to be great now, is they know they can't do it three people. Like, they got to get everyone else on board. So I think some of this is these kids buying into what those guys believe and knowing that there's a clear goal. You know, Miles said today, like, this is a team that should compete for a championship. And we expect to, like, to compete for a championship. So
he laid the gauntlet down. That's
He definitely, there was no skirting it. There was no, like, I like this team. There's none of, it wasn't the coded language. And it was straight up, this team should compete for a championship, which sets a very high bar. So those are the expectations they come in with, even more than any other class, you know? So I think some of that will overflow. They have to obviously push themselves to that end, but I think it'll help that some of those older guys will be pushing them too.
Yeah, and that's part of what I like. I like the way this class sets up to be that deeper class, so that when, you know, the stars of this class, you know, possibly are out of here in 3 years, if three or four of these guys are as good as advertised and they're off of the NFL in a couple of years, there's still going to be guys left over, and there's still going to be grown-ups around. It's just important, I think. We've lost the last couple of years that aspect of just having adults on the team. Yeah, you know, so having 21, 22-year-old guys who have been through it.
Also, just the whole feeling of continuity. There used to be a feeling, particularly with the wide receiver position, you kind of felt it went from one receiver to the next receiver or to the next receiver. It was always like a torch being passed down, and there were certain things that you always expected an LSU wide receiver to do. And somewhere around 2009, 2010, it kind of got lost. But like the Nick Saban to the early Les Miles year, every receiver was, you could trace back to Michael Clayton. Or is this like, no matter how badass you are catching the ball and running the ball, you're going to block and you're going to hit people with authority, and that's what you're going to do. And I'm going to pass that on to the guy behind me. And somehow that got lost around along the way. And I think what's big about this class goes back to the 2014 class. I think they want to pass stuff down. I think Leonard Fournette is taking – he's already taken Geist under his wing. He's going to look at this class and say, okay, how can I make y'all better? I think Brandon Harris, we've already seen him at the signing of the guys being brought in to replace him. How can I make you better? And the defensive backs, that's one thing we've never lost. You know, there's definitely that continuity going back to, you know, Patrick Peterson, Tyrann Mathieu, where these guys are all competing to be the very best defensive back in the country. They really take pride in that. And I think there's that leadership on the team. But it's not just leadership on the field for this year. It's grooming them to be the next leaders, saying this is a program, this is something that we're bequeathing to you, and then you have to bequeath it to the next person. There needs to be continuity. There needs to be some – the name on the side of the helmet means something.
Yeah, I agree. And like it, just having guys – you know, it's redshirting is a luxury that we're not used to anymore, and we've talked ourselves into – oh, well, you don't want to redshirt guys because you want them to play right away, you know, because you may not keep them long enough. It's like, well, if we can reverse that trend of not keeping them when they redshirt, you know, and only getting a year or two of them. That was on the story was that, you know, when Michael Brockers declared, you know, LSU's coaches looked around and said, shit, we only got 2 years of that kid, you know, and they that kind of was where the shift was. But the thing about redshirting them is you look at, you know, the best defenses. You look at Alabama. Alabama had a bunch of veteran guys who either had been if they'd come in and played as freshmen, they were now juniors and they'd been playing for 3 years, or they had redshirted a year and they were sophomores or juniors now, but they were still in their third or fourth year in the program and they'd been working out and practicing and hitting the weights and doing all the things that you're expected to do there. And there's so much value in having that.
Yeah, if you look at Alabama, their depth chart's a little bit of a lie. But if you look at their depth chart for the national championship game, they listed that they had 8 starters in the front 7. Of those front 8 guys, 7 of them were seniors or juniors who would declare for the NFL draft. Now, they still have a ton of talent because that didn't quite line up with playing time. But that does give you an idea of just how much experience they had on that team. They just kept handing stuff down. And I don't think LSU's ever going to get to that point again. We encourage guys to go early. We don't hold guys back. I'm okay with that. If you're a first-round pick, you need to go to the money. NFL careers are short. Football's a violent, violent game. But that said, we need to at least be keeping juniors. And those juniors need to act like leaders. We need juniors to act like seniors. And if you're not a first or a second round pick, you need to be staying. And I think that's something that did change this year. We don't have guys who are leaving early for the NFL draft who you're kind of looking around going, that guy thinks he's going to get taken highly in the draft. You know, they're not fleeing the program. It's the people who are declaring early are guys who are legitimate first or second round picks.
Yeah.
Youth.
And I think that's the advantage of it not being as top, maybe as top heavy of a class as maybe the, not so much the 14, the 11 class. When you look back on it, it's like, yeah, the stars were stars, and they were, you know, a lot of good players, you know, and guys who stuck around, and you know, you had your Kenny Hilliards and your Terrence McGee's and guys like that, but you also had your Anthony Johnsons who were like, I'm here for 3 years and I'm gone, and even if it wasn't the best decision for him, he was here 3 years and he was gone, you know. And I think they maybe have reversed that trend a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, they have cautionary tales.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think this feels like the first year that maybe – because I do agree with you, Poser. Like, the general advice Miles gives is if you can go and get any sort of reasonable money, then go. But it seems like maybe this year based on the reports – well, I don't know how valid those are, but guys like Posick and stuff, all the reports were like, oh, he got a second-round grade, which is normally a guy that would be gone. Like, last year would have been gone. 2 years ago would have been gone. So there's either some sort of I wouldn't say directive, but advice from Les and advisors to be like, stick it out, might be worth a championship here. Or there's a bonding with the teammates or just the general enjoyment of college. I mean, it could be any number of things. It just, but it, there is a different
or a chance
feel.
To go even higher, you know, bet yeah. on yourself. And, you know, yeah, I think that was kind of the whole L. Collins thing.
Yeah,
was
the theoretical.
He bet on himself for another year and would have been a first round pick if not for the yeah, whole that, crazy situation.
Right.
But, he played himself to a first round grade. Yeah, he's a cautionary tale for a different reason, but there's really nothing you can do about that. That's not the fault of coming out early. But look at Beckwith. There's a guy who's coming back, and he can play his way into the first round. He can, and it's hard to say who's a guy who's done that. Booger McFarland? Did he come back a senior? No, he left as a junior, I think.
No, I think he played all 4 years.
So I'm trying to think of someone who played their way into the first round by coming back for a senior year like that. But Beckwith, I think the pitch to Beckwith is you can play yourself into the first round, but also A, that's it, you know, point A. Point B, play for a championship. But point C is, it's college. At the end of the day, when you look back on your life, very few people regret spending an extra year in college, particularly if they're not paying for it.
Yeah, I
mean, they really are the best years of your life. And if you go on for – if we look at it from a football standpoint, every level you jump up higher, the game gets a little less fun. So when you're, you know, when you're first playing on – at the lowest, you know, PB levels, it's just pretty much all fun. And you go to high school and it's a little bit less fun. There's more work, you know, you got to do drills and stuff like that. And then you get higher up in the high school levels and you're starting, it's even less fun because you got to, it becomes work. Once you get to college, it's a big jump and it becomes a lot like a job and it's not all fun and games anymore. But once you get to the pros, there's no fun left.
Yeah, it's all business.
We look at Calvin Johnson.
It's all business and this is it. Your job 24/7 is to be the best football player you can be.
And you look at Calvin Johnson retiring early because he's just like, I don't want to do this anymore. And, you know, good on him. Like, it's once again, it's a dangerous game. And if you're not having fun doing it, you've made millions and millions of dollars, get the heck out. But there's no reason to rush to the NFL if you don't have to. If you're a running back, you should almost always rush to the NFL because your career is going to be incredibly short. So just get out. But for a linebacker,
no money in what you do anymore.
Right. But if you're Kendall Beckwith, there's something to be said for having one more year of football that's fun. It won't be as fun as what you had in high school, but it's going to be a lot more fun than playing for a random NFL franchise.
And by all accounts with him, there was something where he realized he's not that kid. Like, he wants to play pro football, but it's not what he came to LSU to do. He's very much kind of a homebody kid. He's that kid who realizes, you know what, if I come back, I'm an All-American, I win a national championship, whatever else I go do, when I come back here and I want to start a bit, you know, in his case, he might want to open a farm or something like that, or who knows, because he's a different kind of kid. You know, it's going to be that I was Kendall Beckwith, star player at LSU, and that's a hell of a starting point for whatever I want to do when I come
Jim back. Taylor played for both LSU and the Green Bay Packers, and he lives in Baton Rouge. I mean, it's easier to live in a college town when you're a college legend than even a pro legend, even if you play for the Lombardi Packers.
Yeah. Well, guys like Corey Webster, who have made his life here and things like that. And they use what they've done here, you know, and not just their name, but also the connections they made, the people they've met, things like that, that have come from, you know, playing football, to build a life for themselves. And there's definitely value in that. I think that was part of Beckwith's thought process.
So now we look at that. Dan, what are we looking forward to next signing day?
Already, we're already turning our eyes to 2017.
I know you're just dying to have someone that you're targeting for 2017.
Well, we all know that Dylan Moses is going to make.
I know Dylan Moses, so that's not a good answer. Is there anyone?
No, but you know it's going to make Leonard Fournette seem like the calmest recruitment ever.
Yeah. I mean, I did pause it today on Twitter, and I couldn't get as much feedback on this as I thought I might, but if we're going to talk about missing on linebackers and not filling the hole, it's worth debating whether or not the staff almost intentionally left some room as a recruiting pitch to Moses. I don't know that they did, and that may sound ridiculous, but there's a blueprint for it. I mean, they did that with Fournette.
Yeah.
And they basically did it with Fournette.
Yeah. So, like, I was kind of like, I almost expected Miles to give a little wink nod. Like, I thought if they someone asked today, like, oh, you missed on a linebacker, you know, him to do the same thing he did with the Fournette, like, oh, we got our eyes on a pretty good one next year kind of thing, whatever he said. Like, you remember that thing he said about Fournette? So, but Fournette, I mean,
said that meant something to him, too.
Yeah, it did. So, I mean, you know, Moses will be Moses, and whatever happens, happens. And we're going to run through all kinds of shit about Moses from, like, he left the state, and he's a superstar, and he is a freak athlete, but maybe he's not as good as he wants to be, or could be. Maybe he's not a good football player. There's going to be an all manner of debate about him and whatever. I mean, ultimately, LSU fan, opinion of him, if he comes to LSU, he's going to be awesome. If he doesn't, he sucks. So, but I mean,
if you do Joe McKnight would be terrible.
Yeah, exactly. He was a bust all the way, which Joe McKnight was a pretty good college player, but whatever.
Yeah.
We do have a commit already, Tyler Shelvin, who's just a monster defensive tackle. So,
and my understanding, they're expected to get the big kid from Texas, who's supposed to be one of the top defensive tackles too.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me the most interesting guy is Lowell Narcisse, the quarterback, who I think the three of us argued on Twitter about when he picked Auburn, which he's since decommitted. And you two made the case for this means nothing, and I was probably throwing a fit about it, but
yeah, way too far in advance to worry about a 2017
commit. Yeah, I wasn't worried about it yet. And at the time, we still had Franks, and at that time, people forget Franks was going on about how commitment means something to me, and not that I want to slag on the kid, but well, you talked about all that, and it clearly didn't,
So I mean, Narcisse, is the guy I'm like full bore into, but the interesting thing is, and this is, I don't want to open the whole can of worms, but Scott is a more of a running quarterback, and Narcisse is totally a more of a running quarterback. And Bud Elliott absolutely talked about this.
Those two are more on that spectrum than Brandon Harris.
Yeah, they're guys you want to feature in the running game. So, what does LSU do? I mean, Cam Cameron or no Cam Cameron?
They've talked about introducing more spread concepts
and
running more out of the shotgun. And that wouldn't be the worst idea because that can open up your passing game.
Yeah, and they're going to have to display that, I think, if they want to win Narcisse over. Because he strikes me as a kid that, like, kind of has a feel for the type of system he wants to play in. That's just the feel I get from him. I don't know.
They also
wins sometimes, though.
It's one of those weird situations where him getting hurt a lot has kind of helped LSU because the coaches have been like some of the first people that have been, going to see him with his injuries and everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing is with him. Yeah, but you're right. He and Scott are much more of on that spectrum of like, no. You're going to want to run that kid a couple times a game because he's that good of a runner. Especially in Narcisse's case, he's more of a really good runner who happens to have a huge arm.
Yeah.
Or not a huge arm, a big arm.
Yeah.
Whereas Harris, it's a big-armed kid who happens to be able to move a little bit, but he's not like this breathtaking runner.
Yeah.
He's kind of more of a scrambler who can kind of buy himself some time versus a guy. He's terrible on the zone read. I mean, he's doesn't read that play very well.
So now we look at the end of the 2016 that we've, put the class to bed. Everyone's in the barn. Everyone's signed except for whoever's we're going to put into JUCO. Alabama, again, gets the number one class in the country, as they always do. Did we keep pace? Because I think that's another part of LSU fans' big frustrations is, we were going to be the team that broke Alabama's string of number one classes, and here at the end of the day, Alabama's number one again. How big is the gap between 1 and 3?
It's not that
big. That's a man question.
I don't find it to be that big. When I look over their class, and they have a great class. So don't, like, I'm nitpicking on a class here. But Alabama has just some different recruiting techniques, which we saw them here at the end of this cycle bail on a bunch of kids, which is what they've done. And LSU has done it before, too. I'm not, like, starting some parade about how Alabama's the only school that did it. Michigan did it as well. you know, they, and Billy, you've made this point, and I think it's a very valid point, that we never know the full story. So for all we know, this three-star linebacker who just now is publicly decommitting from Alabama, they haven't talked to him in 6 months, which, you know, if you've waited that long to decommit, you didn't get the message or something. So they took some interesting kids, and they, I feel like they make it a point to take a kid out of Louisiana or two that usually LSU doesn't have much of an interest in, and it's, I think it's more of an image thing. Like this year they took Irv Smith, this tight end from Brother Martin. Billy, like you and I emailed about it, and you, like the Swilling brothers are playing there.
My high school.
So it's like, Irv Smith is a fine player. I'm not trying to bag on Irv Smith at all. He's a good D1 player. It's just,
he's more of a kind of a H-back, yeah, fullback kind of player than a tight end, which they don't use a fullback.
Yeah. So it's just like, it's just kind of, they took a guy to take a guy basically to be like, look, we have people from Louisiana on our roster. And it, that's kind of a smart play for them because
image does matter in these things.
Yeah. And it's hard to take players out of Louisiana. as we proved this year. So,
well, and Brother Martin's got a couple of kids next year that, you know, now they've got one of their classmates on campus, and there's definitely value to that. We can all debate the morals of that style of recruiting. But at the end of the day, you're either uncomfortable with it or you're not. And if LSU's not comfortable with it, I'm not going to fault them for that. You know, we're not Alabama, and I don't necessarily want to be Alabama.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Ultimately, the point I made, in terms of just the how close are we? So Alabama got one more 5-star than LSU did, but LSU got two more 4-stars than Alabama, and they took an extra 3-star. So, I mean, if you were to add all the stars, it's equitable, right? Like, it doesn't, there's no difference there. Where they rank within the star spectrum obviously is going to vary, and which is ultimately why 247 or whoever was going to say that they have a better class. But they took the exact same number of commitments. I feel like they're basically the same class. Like, for me, you could convince me that Alabama, Florida State, LSU, or Ohio State have the number one class, and I'm not really going to argue against that.
Here's the one thing, because I'm not as deep into recruiting as you two are. I follow it, but I kind of go with kind of the icky factor, and I kind of keep – but I did have the TV on today, and I was watching all the announcements go through. And normally on signing day, every time there's an Alabama hat on the table, the kid picks up the Alabama hat. And it's just like this inevitable red tide. And it's just awful to watch. And you just sit there and it's just like Alabama, Alabama, Alabama. And it didn't feel like that today. It felt like they lost a lot of battles. I mean, they were in all of them. So, I mean, that's a good sign for them. And so they still picked up a lot of big recruits. But I felt like Florida State, of course, Texas had bigger days. And I feel like Alabama missed on some big recruits. The kid who signed with Mississippi State, that kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, that was a weird one.
There were number one classes, and there was number one classes. This one didn't feel as awe-inspiring as some of their other classes. Oh, like, they've had some a few years ago where you're just like, good Lord, that's everybody. And this one felt, yeah, like there's four or five schools that could have had the number one class. Like, it felt like a really, really good class, but it didn't feel like they just ran away with the talent this year.
Particularly, and LSU's been keeping last year's class, which with the great finish and the 14 class are much closer, you know, whereas, you know, you go back to 2012 and that's kind of the class where you look back and you're like, yeah, that class didn't pan out the way we kind of hoped. And it wasn't that highly ranked on signing day too. So it's kind of like those kids were the upperclassmen the last couple of years. And so it's, you know, I think there's definitely that inching is kind of back on top of it.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with both of you. I don't think it's a class that's so far out in front like the past Bama classes. It's a really good class. They have good players. I mean, if you look at the bottom, like we just, to start this segment, we looked at the bottom of LSU's class. I'm not going to act like I know all of Bama's commits as well, and I'm sure that they could give me good reasons, but they have 7 3-stars, which is more than we have. And so I mean, honestly, at Alabama, where are these kids going to play other than special teams? Like, let's be real about that, right?
one of them might be a diamond in the rough.
Yeah. I mean, that's – and usually that player, the diamond in the rough, is the nose tackle that Saban gets, and that's because that's a weird body type to find. But that's not the case. They have 2 3-star tight ends. I mean –
yeah, I don't see where that's going to help him that whole lot.
Yeah, and I mean, those guys aren't O.J. Howard. And I mean, they could be nice little, like, blocker, you know, decent starter.
But most of the Titans haven't been O.J. Howard. So those guys are going to – you know, you look back to guys like was it Chris Smelly or was it Brad Smelly or Chris Smelly they had who
– Brad Smelly,
on that 11 team who he was their tight end slash fullback. And yeah. I think I argued at the time, and I still hold up to it, that – he might have been their second most important player after Trent Richardson because of how much he was just always on the field, and they were always
they
doing
moved
something
him everywhere. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, just look at the class. Look, if you look at the bottom of the class, I think there are roughly 7 guys that. I mean, it's not going to be like all of them are gone, but there's 7 guys that I could be like, this guy's never going to play like a super meaningful
he's
role.
He's going to get processed.
Yeah. Fuck him. But
well, but those guys but also those become guys, your Kenyon Drakes and your Blake Sims too, you know?
Yeah. And there's definitely merit to that. So, I mean, I'm not going to be, I don't know. I'm not trying to throw all these kids under the bus either. I'm just saying there's probably kids here that propped up their ranking a little bit. Again, that made them finish as the number 1 class when it's really just kind of
like if those kids had signed with Ole Miss or Mississippi State, they're not rated as highly. Because look, they deserve the Bama bump at this point. Saban has done a great job, and if he's on a kid, it's probably because he's good. So it's hard to criticize a recruiting site for giving a Bama bump.
Don't take kids for nothing. So they got something. Either they like the kid, they think he's really going to be great, or they're making a play for something, whether it's to get into a high school or to get a teammate or to get a best friend or whatever. There's always a reason.
So the other question is this class for Les Miles, this is really a great class. It harkens back to 2014. How much of this class do you think is because of him seeing his football life at LSU flashing before his eyes? Right, how much credit does Oliva get to take for saying, you know, I scared Les Miles of doing his job and being a great recruiter again?
I don't think that much. I mean, a lot of this class was already committed.
Yeah, they really didn't lose that much during that whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's a testament that they kept them around through all of that shit, in my opinion. But I don't think that spurred them into action. Honestly, this is my big thing, and feel free to disagree with me. You tweeted something about it earlier today, Poser, but like the talent level, it's not like we took some dramatic dip. It's not like we're like, you know, suddenly Mississippi State or something.
No. We've only had one class in the past 7 or 8 years that was out of the top 10. Yeah. And I think it was that 12 class.
I do think we've missed in some key areas that have caused us to suffer from the style of play we'd like to play. Like, we're not as big and physical team as we would like to be. And so I think part of that was self-assessment and Miles looking at the staff and saying, some of these guys just aren't getting it done. So Dwawa and Haley, you know, they're not bringing in recruits. And I don't care how good of coaches they are. We're not going to win if we don't have the talent, you know? So I think this is just my theory, is that, like, that was kind of the genesis, the driving point of getting a guy like Grimes, going to get Ogeron, getting Steele even, who's a very good recruiter and knows the South really well. And
who did, to his credit, play a big role in kind of setting this class up.
Yeah, and I was just about to say, so as much as I hated Kevin Steele as our defensive coordinator on game day, he's a big factor in why this was a really good class, you know? So it's like...
Yeah.
We have to be thankful for him. And then Pivoto, too, who was so maligned. Like, he killed it in this cycle. I mean,
absolutely.
He just destroyed it. So
his paycheck.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I guess I'm raising
How Tavis do at A&M this year in recruiting?
Yeah. Well, he's never done well in recruiting. That's – yeah, okay.
All I'm getting at is that I think people are always like, Les is so out of touch. He has no idea. Like, we run these 1940s things. And to me, I'm like, no, Les is perfectly in touch. He looked at the situation, assessed it, and has made the adequate adjustments. It just takes it a couple years to get fixed. It's not something that's like, we're not going to go Ole Miss this under Houston Nutt and sign 42 guys, you know, and suddenly have depth. Like,
a football program is a lot like an aircraft carrier. You can't make sudden course corrections. It takes a while for that thing to turn.
So I think that was a lot of the driving force in the hires he's made. Obviously not all of them fit that. And I mean, you guys might totally disagree with me, but I think there has been a further emphasis on getting really good recruiters.
No, I totally agree. I remember when they hired Steele, about the only positive I could come out of it was we didn't build a defensive staff. We built a recruiting staff.
Yeah.
It paid off this year. And honestly, the knock on Aranda, because we don't know, is whether he can recruit. But he closed on some guys, so that's encouraging. Yeah. He's already brought in more people than Chavis did.
Yeah, I saw someone complain on, I think, Tire Droppings, and we're like, why didn't he bring anybody over from Wisconsin? I was like, buddy, I'm not trying to bag on Wisconsin, but we recruit a slightly different caliber of player than Wisconsin.
I mean, he basically said in his opening press conference that he was kind of looking forward to, you know, not having to kind of piece things together anymore and kind of having like, oh, wait, no, I've got these guys. I know exactly who I want to play where.
All right. So there is the end of signing day. I know this was a big day for both of you because this is like your favorite day of the year. This is your Super Bowl. So now we will move to the actual Super Bowl for the rest of the country.
Can we call it the Super Bowl, or are we going to get sued?
Segway, motherfucker.
Thank you. I need to soundboard that eventually.
Yeah, and this is something I just found interesting because signing day has become its own little cult thing where people take days off of work, and it's like a really big event now. But the Super Bowl is the ultimate sports event. And it has become America's secular holiday. And I think that even if you don't follow sports, even I have friends who never watch football, even they will go to a Super Bowl party. And why do you think that is? Why do you think the NFL has such a foothold in just the American consciousness?
Well, I think ironically, you're talking about this, and my wife and I were having the discussion prior to this week as to whether or not we cared about watching the Super Bowl or whether we would go to Bacchus. But that's a Mardi Gras happening to falling on this weekend. Not so much reflection of the Super Bowl.
And a very specific culture.
Yeah, that's
That's a very culture-specific thing. I think it's just it's become a pop culture event. And even if you don't, maybe you want to see the halftime show. Maybe you want to see the commercials. Although I feel like the commercials have been trending down the last couple of years. Maybe you just want to see all the hype. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's an excuse to party. Partying's fun.
Yeah, I think that's any excuse people can make to gather and have food and drink, they will do. So I think that's
and
a big part of it.
The pool party can kind of be that perfect, especially, you know, speaking as, you know, a married person, it's kind of that perfect married party because if your wife wants to watch football, she can watch football. If she wants to talk to her friends, she can talk to her friends. If you want to watch football, you can sit and watch football. If you want to not talk to people, you can kind of sit and watch football and not talk to people. No one's really going to bother you because there's a football game on. And that's kind of why you're at the party.
It's actually – you're right about that. It's really good for marrieds. As a married guy with
– kids can go off in the back of the house and do stuff.
You do not see your friends as much as you would like. Or at least I don't. It's just you have your job, you have your kids, you have your wife. You got a tight schedule, and it's hard just to pencil in. Like, I can go months without seeing some of my best friends. It's just the way of the world because whenever I have a free weekend, they don't have one. And that's the Super Bowl, everybody has a free day. And so to get together, it's a good way to catch up with people. And it's like, hey, everybody, let's come over to the house. And it's not quite warm enough where you can grill, even though I could this weekend, and that was great. But I like the fact that you can invite people over, and it is a chance to catch up, and you know they're going to have their schedule cleared out. It is perfectly designed for busy suburban dads. Parenting just is such a time suck, which Billy is now beginning to learn. And also, it's harder to go out. Like if you have kids, it's you have to find a babysitter, you have to do whatever. a Super Bowl party, you're going to go over to someone's house. You're going to chill out, you know, have some chili, some cornbread. There'll probably be a nice little spread there, maybe some cookies. It's a nice it's like a very laid back tailgate.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and also there's the factor of, I mean, we like to think as we get older, we mature and kind of grow out of these things, but if you're not, we're sports fans, so it doesn't really apply to us because we probably know a shit ton more about this than just your average person, but it's a social acceptance event, right? So, like, your coworkers can, like, be like, yeah, I'm going to watch Super Bowl, and then they can, like, have shit to talk to you about, you know? Like, that's so dumb, but I feel like people do it for that reason.
No, it is. There is something to be said for having a socially acceptable conversation. And then you can always have the person, I'm not going to watch the Super Bowl because football is beneath me. Yeah. And, you know, hey, that gives you something to talk about with them. So then when they leave, you can look at it and go, who was that dick? And
well, it's a very ubiquitous event. There's something, there's usually something about it for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, it's
which is, as much as people hate it, a credit to how well the NFL has marketed that son of a bitch. Like,
they are geniuses.
Yeah. You get Katy Perry, like, well, I love Katy Perry, but I mean, still, that's a great mass market appeal that even your average fan is going to be like, hell yeah, I'll watch that so I can watch 30 minutes of Katy Perry.
And the amazing thing is, it's other sports have not been able to do that. World, when I was a kid, the World Series was the big event, and it has slowly withered on the vine.
Yeah.
Even the NBA, which is really, really popular, probably the second most popular sport, it's not the same. The NBA Finals, mainly because it takes place over a course of several games. But even, you know, the college football national championships, it's not the same. Now, even a January 1st party is not the same as a Super Bowl party. It does not hold that same place in our culture. It is the one sporting event where everybody's just like, yes, we're going to watch this game. No matter what, this is, you know, every company is saying, hey, we're going to put our commercial on, we're going to kick off our ad campaign. And in a way, it becomes a referendum on the culture on a lot of things. Like with this Super Bowl, you have the old white guy, Peyton Manning, coming against the young upstart, Cam Newton. And that becomes its own narrative that kind of feeds itself. And it becomes a referendum on what we stand for as a culture. And so people have turned it into like this political argument online. Like, you're not allowed to dislike Cam Newton. And let me tell you something. You can hate Cam Newton because he went to fucking Auburn. So fuck that guy forever. I don't care how many fucking Play 60 commercials he does. Fuck that guy.
Honestly, I think the people who say you can't hate Cam Newton have made me actually hate Cam Newton.
I know. I agree with you because I read like one column about hating Cam Newton. And it was written by Rick Riley. And who listens to him? And it just has gotten out of control. Just like they dug up comments from like Brian Urlacher. Like, what, under what rock did they find him? It's just like,
yeah, get fair enough.
I mean,
sorry. That was a total non-sequitur.
It really is like this, like, well, how could you hate anything he does? Like, well, he ripped down an opposing fan's banner. That's kind of shitty. You know, I don't want my quarterback doing that. You know, like, and I am never the guy who was like, you know, oh, win with class or do this or that. Okay, but you also don't have to do a dance after every single first down that you pick up. Like, there's a middle ground in between these two extremes that I feel like this could be applied to everything in this country nowadays, but it's like, no. I can still think Cam Newton's really, really good at what he does and not like him.
Yeah, look, I didn't root for Wayne Gretzky, right? I'm a hockey fan and did not root for Wayne fucking Gretzky, who basically, if you don't watch hockey, can be described as take how good Michael Jordan is, multiply it by 10, and you're still nowhere near how good Wayne Gretzky was. And I hated his fucking guts. But I still recognize he's the greatest player ever. And I do enjoy the fact that the Super Bowl kind of comes with a culture war. I'll admit, I enjoy that kind of thing. I like the fact that Peyton Manning, who is the king of boring. He's the computer program. He does commercials with that, you know, motherfucker from Papa John's. He's just...
gotten compelling because now he's so just at the end of it. This is his last hurrah.
He is
and
last
that
hurrah.
Makes him a little more compelling.
And it's also like, hey, it's my generation. I was in college at the same time as Peyton Manning, and so it's basically my generation's last hurrah. It's like, this is it. There is no longer going to be anyone in the NFL playing, I think, who was around when I was in college. This is it. This is the last guy. And so for me, it's a little wistful. I never rooted for Peyton because he went to Tennessee and he was from New Orleans. So once again, fuck you. Even though no way he should have gone to LSU back then. I mean, we were
talking. I don't think LSU even recruited him that hard.
I think we called and they hung up.
Thanks, Josh Booty.
And he played for the Colts, and that wasn't ever – I was never going to root for that. So, And now he plays for the Broncos, and John Elway is in charge of that. Once again, Baltimore Colts, fuck you forever. So I've never liked Peyton Manning, but I am going to be sad to see him go. Like, this is like the one game I think in his entire life I'll root for Peyton Manning just because, hey, he's kind of defined my football sports fandom for 20 years, and I'm going to miss that.
He's one of the – it's funny. It's been kind of the reverse – where especially on Twitter and in the blogosphere, where it's kind of the vogue thing to dislike Peyton Manning, and I was kind of like, well, he's really not that bad, like the whole, oh well, he can't beat Tom Brady, and then it was like, well, no, actually they're like 2-2 against each other in the playoffs, so it's like this idea that, well, he never does this, he never does that. Well, he's got a championship, so it's not like he did it one time, and he got to the Super Bowl another time. Thank God he lost it.
Well, it's weird how sometimes a championship, we care about championships for a guy until we don't. Like, Peyton Manning had to win championship, and then he won one. And everyone's like, it doesn't really matter. And that goes back to the 50s, the 60s. Wilt Chamberlain, he's not as good as Bill Russell. And then he wins a championship, and they're like, that doesn't really count. So you won another one. And they're like, it doesn't really count. You're still not Bill Russell. And it's just weird how sometimes championships – We say this is what validates a career, but it really doesn't. It's only if we like you.
Well, it was the weird – to me, it really got weird with Manning a couple of years ago when they lost to the Seahawks in the Super Bowl, his third Super Bowl, which is only a handful of quarterbacks that even played in three. And it became the whole, oh, well, Peyton Manning loses another one. And that was a game where his team just got boat raced off the field.
Oh, it was beautiful.
From like snap one, like to the point where it's like, how can you blame it on Peyton Manning?
I love every second of it.
They were just so out. They were completely outmatched. Like,
boy, was it glorious! And so, it'll be weird for me to root for Peyton. I will say, and the thing is, like, there's a lot of things about the Panthers I like. I have friends who I'm originally from the East Coast, so I know people who settled in North Carolina. So I know a lot of Panther fans. I don't think that any of them are going to go to the game, but they follow the Panthers. I love Luke Kuechly. I think he's just an outstanding player. And look, Cam's an exciting player to watch. I love watching him play. I mean, I root against him, but he is redefining what a quarterback can do. I mean, we've had running quarterbacks before, but none of them are built like Cam Newton.
I'm
a Saints fan. I fucking hate those guys.
I mean, it's not just that he's big. He's big and fast. He's a fun player to watch. And so, I really going to enjoy the contrast. It's weird because I don't think there's really a team that I hate in this game, because it's not like another, New England Patriots Super Bowl. I don't think I could emotionally have dealt with that. For me, this will be a game where I just get to sit down and whatever happens, and I enjoy it. But then again, I don't know how much the game I'll actually watch. I think I'm going to be hanging out, playing with kids, going through the record collection and, hanging out with friends I haven't seen in a while. And I think that's kind of how you end up watching the Super Bowl as you get older, because NFL doesn't mean as much to me.
Agreed.
It's kind of how it was for me as a kid, because for years, my team was terrible. So when it came to the Super Bowl, chances are I didn't really have any kind of an emotional investment. I didn't particularly like the Cowboys, so I kind of rooted against them. But it wasn't like I was devastated when they won. The same thing with the 49ers. It's like, oh, I just wish someone would beat the 49ers. But no one ever came close. So you never really had a chance to kind of get – invested in the idea of another team doing it. And then, the first one that I really kind of rooted for and the team I kind of picked one was the Denver Broncos with John Elway, and that was just kind of I really wanted to see John Elway get a title, and Terrell Davis was a lot of fun to watch.
God damn you, John Elway. Okay, this will require a little bit of explanation because some people are just really young. John Elway was drafted by the Baltimore Colts. I was growing up in Baltimore at the time, and John Elway told the cameras, he said these words, I don't mean to be a jerk or anything, but I'm not going to play for Baltimore. And then a few weeks later, the Baltimore Colts moved to Indianapolis. Elway had long since been traded to Denver in one of the worst trades in NFL history. But as a small child, I partially blamed John Elway for moving the Colts. So he took my team away. I don't think there's a player I have rooted against more in his life than John Elway.
You're gonna hate this stat. Denver Broncos have played in 7 Super Bowls with quarterbacks the Colts drafted.
Yeah, I know that. Well, once they moved to Indianapolis, I don't care. But like when John Elway won his Super Bowl and everyone had this outpouring of emotion of just like, oh, it's so beautiful that John Elway. Oh, it drove me insane. I was like, fuck that guy. I wanted him to lose and have misery and nothing but heartache. And instead, he came back and won another one. So that just goes to show that there are no happy endings in sports.
Well, they beat the Atlanta Falcons. That was a pretty happy ending.
Yeah, see, you're a Saints fan. That mattered more to you. And like, I like the Saints, but
I'm all for anything that causes pain to the Atlanta Falcons.
See, and for me, it's to John Elway. Anything that causes pain to John Elway, which I guess means I'm rooting for Carolina.
Yeah, he's the general manager.
I don't have a pick, I don't think. I guess I'm rooting for Carolina too, because I like Cam Newton. I mean, I think he's cool. I don't root for the Saints. I don't root for the NFC South, so I don't have to like be on the bitter end of his shtick, which I think makes it unbearable. But I mean, I think he's fun. I kind of liked him when he was at Auburn. I just wish someone would
acknowledge that's it.
That's what hurts me. Like,
yes.
Every time I see Cam Newton, I see him running over Patrick Peterson. And that is – God, that is one of my most painful sports memories.
I think I had such admiration for him. And, like, I watched him for, like, 3 games at Auburn before we ever played them. And I was like, holy shit. Like, this guy, you know, like, he's just not going to be stopped. Like, it's just not going to happen. And pretty much that's what happened, you know. Like, he just didn't get stopped, really. I guess the national championship, he kind of shit the bed that game. But
I do think it's interesting that he kind of goes with the Superman shtick, because we came up with Patrick Peterson as Zod, the Superman villain. So Cam, without knowing about us, adopted the hero fight. You know, he would not kneel before Zod. But he is Superman, so that kind of works out well. So well played, Cam. You actually played into my joke without knowing that we had told that joke at all.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, it, the whole discussion of him just is very annoying. But I freely admit, no, he's the best player. He should be the MVP. He is doing things that no other he is the new physical prototype of what you would if you could draw up your perfect quarterback, you would draw up him.
He's so unique. He's not a prototype because he's too unique.
He's that big and he's that fast and he's got that big of an arm. And he can throw it that well.
You look at him, you're like, there might never be a player like this again. I don't think there is a prototype. You're just not going to see too many 260-pound quarterbacks with that big of an arm who can run that fast. It's just – yeah.
There have been guys that have been like Dante Culpepper was a big guy like that, but he couldn't maintain it. He had 1 or 2 great years and –
you know, and
fell
it,
off.
It's just one of those things where you do look at this guy where it's just – so it's so out of the norm, and it is fun to watch. I do like that about watching him, but I hate the Twitter blogosphere thing being told who I'm allowed to root for. This whole, yeah. Oh, there is no valid reason you can root against. You know what? As long as you have a non-discriminatory reason for rooting for or against a player, knock yourself out. If you don't like his haircut, that is a valid reason to root against a player. Like, I do not like this trying to regulate other people's fandom shit that has really taken over Twitter in the last couple of weeks. you can, it is perfectly valid to hate people. And in fact, if you went up to Cam Newton and say, man, I hate you as a player, he would probably take that as a compliment, because this goes back to my other theory. No one hates Vanderbilt.
Yeah, pretty much.
You have to be great to be hated.
To me, it's funny from the people who will talk about Russell Wilson being, oh, he's so fake and he's so this, and oh, look at Cam giving balls to kids in the stands, like, yeah, and he always knows where the camera is, so he can turn around and smile right after he does it. You know, it's fake is, we don't know what's fake, and if you say that Russell Wilson's fake, you say that Cam Newton's fake, you say that J.J. Watt is fake, and God knows I've thought that too, because Lord knows.
He
knows where the camera is, and he knows, you know, who he's playing to when he talks about how, oh, I just have a little shack in the woods, when it's like a 4-car garage mansion.
But that's also part of the job. I mean, there's...
Oh, absolutely.
This goes to last week. It's pro wrestling. They're selling a narrative, and J.J. Watt knows that he is representing a certain thing, and he's going to play that up as much as he can, that, oh gosh, I'm just a redneck from Wisconsin, because he knows that's his role, and that's what sells, and also that's what gets him endorsements. That makes him money to do that. So, but at the end of the day –
which also brings up another thing about Cam Newton. He can't be too hated because he's got a whole lot of endorsements.
Yeah, and the NFL puts them in their advertisements. So it's not even like they resent it. You see those NFL Play 60 ads or the United Way ads, you see the same faces. It's Cam Newton, it's Russell Wilson, it's J.J. Watt. And the reason is because they're the most popular players.
Yes. I feel like it's...
And they're good with the media. They're affable people, you know.
They have personality too. I mean, it all plays into it. I feel like this started with LeBron. I mean, I know there were media, like athletes that were popular in the media before LeBron, but I feel like LeBron made it a thing to like sort of formulate an image as an athlete. I mean, Jordan, I guess, really was
Jordan.
Jordan did. Jordan definitely
was the first, but Jordan also didn't live in quite an era of so much coverage. So like,
that's true. And also, Jordan's image would never fly today.
Right. Where everyone would think Jordan was a fucking dick now.
That's exactly what I thought when he played. He's a sociopath. I mean, it was always these things of like, and then like tortured him and like, cried and tried to kill himself. You're like, oh my God, what is wrong with you? Yeah.
I feel like LeBron was the first guy to like capitalize on it and be like, hey, I can like manipulate everyone into thinking I'm pretty cool. And I'm not saying LeBron isn't cool. Like, I like LeBron fine.
Yeah, I love LeBron.
Yeah, I think he's great.
Like, he's a very nice... Like, when people say, like, oh, he's not Michael Jordan, I was like, yeah, he seems like he's a decent guy. Yeah. Michael Jordan was a dick.
And it comes back to when we talk about athletes, we don't know these guys. And this is always my Kirby Puckett is always my lesson. When I was a kid, Kirby Puckett was... He was everything I wanted to be in a baseball player, and everybody loved Kirby Puckett, and he turned out to be a violent sociopath. And it just comes down to the fact that these guys have been crafting their image forever, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. They need to craft their image because it makes them more money. It'll help them in contract negotiations. It'll help them when they try and get endorsements. And at the end of the day, they're not doing this for fun. They're doing it so they can make some money. This is their job. And part of their job is putting the best foot forward. And the guys, and some guys, their image is not putting the best foot forward. Like, I love Barry Bonds, but Barry Bonds like took it as a point of pride on how much he could piss people off.
Yes.
I mean, it was glorious. I mean, he would drive people insane, but he kind of had the mentality that he just truly did not care. And
yeah, he was kind of like Jordan. He was kind of a sociopath.
He was not as big of a jerk as he's been portrayed in the media. And the reason we know that is because once he retired, he stopped doing jerky things. Like, he just – it was his image that he crafted. And he played in that narrative. You know, baseball needed a villain. They needed a counterpoint to Griffey. So Bonds was there, and he played it. And that helped him. That helped his image. And at the end of the day, it made him money until, you know, the steroid thing at the very end where it cost him stuff. But I think everybody is playing that media game. And it's disingenuous to say, well, I don't like this guy because he's fake. Well, no shit. They're all fake.
Yeah, and not to go down too deep a well with Barry Bonds, but I will probably go to my grave with the theory that there was such a deep insecurity there because Barry was fucking amazing. Like, before he was gigantic and hitting the ball like 700 feet, you know, he was amazing. But I feel like he was never like in his era, it was always like, well, Ken Griffey Jr. is awesome. Like, he's the greatest thing ever. Frank Thomas, look at this guy. And then Mark McGwire. And then it's like, Barry Bonds is like, what the fuck else do you want me to do? Like, hello, I do everything well. I'm amazing. And then I think he just lost it and was like, okay, fine. I'll do what they're doing.
Bash
the shit out of the ball.
With the Jeff Perlman book, that was basically it. He's like, okay, if this is what I got to do to get as much endorsements as Griffey and McGwire, I'll take steroids and start hitting home runs.
I think he just lost his mind eventually.
When the Sporting News named him the player of the decade in the 90s, like it happened like 99 at the end of the decade, and that's back when the Sporting News was still the Bible of baseball, and they named Bonds the player of the decade, and people flipped their shit because it was like, how on earth could you not make it Griffey?
Yeah.
And then when you look – and this is like – pre-steroid Bonds, because 99 he'd probably just started.
Right, yeah,
and you look at the numbers, Bonds.
Yeah, that was what was so weird about the steroid thing is he was already a Hall of Famer.
And then you looked at the numbers in the 90s, and it was such a no-brainer. Bonds was better than Griffey in pretty much every way a player can be better. Griffey was better defensively, and that's pretty much it. Bonds was
not by a lot.
Oh no, Bonds was amazing. Like, he is. When my dad would talk about Mickey Mantle, I would show him Barry Bonds and be like, that's what Mickey Mantle is today. And yeah. Barry Bonds is the greatest baseball player I've ever seen in my life. He was so, and this is before he became a cheat code. And at that point, that was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
he wasn't even a baseball player at that point. He was a cheat code. He was amazing to watch. I loved everything about that guy. But I was like the only kid on my block who liked Barry Bonds. Everyone else is a big Griffey fan, and that's cool. You like Griffey? I'm not here to tell you that Griffey sucked, because he clearly didn't. Griffey was awesome. My point is that as great as Griffey was, Bonds was even better. That's how great he was. And people didn't appreciate it, so he did a big bucket of steroids because he didn't give a shit if he didn't like him. And that paid off well for him. And what's funny is we're keeping him – this goes into a whole other schedule. They're keeping him out of the Hall of Fame. And for certain guys, I think it bothers them. I think like Rafael Palmeiro not being in the Hall of Fame, that tears him up. Mark McGwire, I think it really bothers him that people turned on him. Barry Bonds, I don't think has ever lost a night's sleep. Not 1 minute that he's not in the Hall of Fame. He does not need the Hall of Fame to validate his greatness. He does not give a shit. And that is awesome. That's what makes it even better, because one side is so pissed at him and he's like, all right, fine, be pissed. I'm still the best ever. And it just makes me happy.
Yeah, I think that's
I think he cares, because if he'd have cared, he would have admitted to the steroids have been and said, yeah, I did it.
See, I feel like that's the wire that was tripped. That's what he did care. And then finally, he just reached a point where he's like, okay, fuck it. If that's what you want, here you go. I don't give a shit anymore. I'm going to do it bigger and badder than anyone. You know, like, I'm going to be the most gigantic, musclehead dude. And now, like, he's lost a ton of weight. He's, like, kind of skinny now.
At least he's doing, like, bicycles and bicycle tours and stuff. Yeah, it's really cool shit. And that ties into, you know, as we try and tie it back into the Super Bowl, you have all these really cool personalities in the game, but the media will build you up and then tear you down, and it'll be the same people who built you up that'll tear you down. And so the people who are in love with Cam now eventually will turn on him for the next shiny new thing. And the people who are actually tearing Cam down now will then build him up in 5 years as some sort of redemption story. And it'll all be bullshit. But, you know, everybody's gotta sell their blog. You know, you gotta – gotta sell papers.
Hey, we're all in the story writing business.
Yeah, we are. And I love stories. Stories are what make this shit great. At the end, if it was just a series of stats on the page, who gives a shit? It's the stories that are fun. We were just talking about the signing of Lindsey Scott. There was a great story there.
Yeah,
and that's the hook. You know, you have the story today in the Players Tribune, like winning tons of fans on, you know, what my recruitment was like. We need the narrative. The narrative is what makes it great. I love the story. I don't give it up. And honestly, that's why the Super Bowl has worked so well, because every year they're going to repackage it in that 30-minute NFL Films video, and there's always going to be a story. I will stay up and watch every one of those goddamn things. I'm a sucker for the story. And with that, since I have gotten both of you to shut up with that, I think we're going to close it on that. I am a sucker for the story.